Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop. For this Tuesday, December 9th, I'm Ray Graff. Time once again to talk car maintenance and repair with our pal, Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. You got a car question? Call us, 800-348-2551. Get in the queue early. These tend to be popular programs, 800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. I already have a short stack of emails, but you can get in there as well. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Cars, Gordon Fricke, and you coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions. Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, towing, and used car facility. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for decades. He knows his stuff. If you have a question, maybe a check engine light is on or there's a funny rattle, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Feel free to email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ray. How are you doing?
What'd you drive down today?
Audi All-Road wagon with a Bang & Olufsen sound system from the factory.
What'd you have on?
Neil Young.
Nice.
Roger Hodgson. A whole bunch of stuff just came up on like a playlist.
Yeah.
And I sat in the parking lot. I got here really early.
Yeah.
No traffic. I took the back way and I listened to a whole bunch of stuff in that car. And actually, Ed Rosen caught me, you know, leaving the car.
Just hanging out.
Well, I got out of the car when he did and I said, I've been here a while listening to some tunes in this car because the sound system's so good.
Well, you know, the stereo in my car, which it's an older car. It's a 2011, I think. Great stereo. And one channel, there's some loose connection because every now and then I hit a bump and I'll lose the right channel, the right front speaker.
Is this the Cadillac?
Yeah.
Is that a Bose?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it just goes and comes. And usually it's fine, but then the other day I was driving along listening to some old Grateful Dead concert from 100 years ago and all of a sudden, right channel goes out.
Just when you didn't need that to happen.
No, exactly. But, yeah, the Bang & Olufsen, that's nice.
It's a cool system, yeah.
Number here is 800. We'll talk car stereos with you as well. 800-348-2551 is the number. I remember in the 65 Le Mans, that was my father's. It was my grandmother's. I think my father talked my grandmother in 1965 into getting this really sharp two-door, high-power car that she almost never drove.
Great sales pitch on his part.
Yeah, he wasn't dumb. And then by the time I got it, and when I was 16, I think it had 45,000 miles on it.
Oh, that was mint.
But it had an AM radio. Very good AM radio.
FM was pretty high end back then.
So 1980 or so, or I don't know. Got one of those converters. You remember those converters?
I do.
You put the antenna into it and then back into the radio.
A friend of mine had one.
Got FM.
An FM converter to an AM radio.
It worked.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong. The number here is 800-348-2551. Yeah, we can talk about actual car stuff, too. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. Now, before we get to the emails and the calls, what would Roger think? What's our episode today?
Well, that's a good question because we could talk about what would Roger think for the whole show. But my peeve or what really gets me is the over-engineering, the over-design, the over-complexity of systems. And today's subject are engines, gasoline engines.
Right.
And there's a couple of really good guys that I watch on YouTube. And one is an oil expert, the Motor Oil Geek. And there's another guy that is an engineer. And the guy's brilliant in all kinds of stuff, automobiles and bikes and stuff. But if you study or look at the way engines are designed today, it's absolutely insane. For the sole purpose of efficiency, more horsepower, better fuel economy, more bang for your buck in the package.
You know,
200 horsepower per liter. So these engines are stressed highly. They're turbocharged. their tolerances now are so precise and so fine that they're using these incredibly thin oils.
Right.
0.20, 0.16.
Amazing.
However, there's a horrible side effect to that. And the machining processes are leaving debris in the engines that is becoming very difficult to thoroughly clean and wash out.
Yeah.
And I'm talking, these are microscopic particles. It's like paste almost. And they're showing up in bearing failures, camshaft control systems, variable valve timing. And the failures, when they're catastrophic, are so expensive.
Right.
If the car's no longer under warranty and you're suffering a complete engine loss, you could be talking $15,000, $20,000 to put an engine in your car. And I've had people call me almost in tears saying, what do I do? My car needs an engine. I owe $28,000 on the car, and the estimate to put an engine in is $19,000.
Yeah.
You can't throw it away. You owe too much money.
Right.
But so what would Roger think? Loosen the tolerances, get rid of all the controls. Don't be so fixated on 400 horsepower and to eke out a little bit more gas mileage. Look in other areas.
But yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with Roger on that one, I think. The number here is 800-348-2551. All right, an email here, and then I see Jake in Stuyvesant Falls has been waiting a while. So we'll do one call before the break. This email came in at 6:54 this morning.
What was the temperature there then? About 2 below zero.
We'd have to find out what it was in Gardner, Mass. This is from Tom, who says, on my high mileage 2013 Ford Explorer, how can we troubleshoot problems with the transfer case?
Now,
for those who don't know what a transfer case is.
Well, so this vehicle is four-wheel drive.
Right.
So you've got the front drive, rear drive, and stuff in between that connects the two together, and that's called the transfer case.
Right.
In old term, it basically linked the front drive shaft to the rear drive shaft and then connected them to the transmission to propel the vehicle. In the olden days, it was called four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
The transfer cases are electronic, and even in his car, being a 13, I think it was a 13.
Yeah.
I'm certain that is a computerized control, because I'm sure it's push buttons. I know it is.
Okay.
A scan tool with software that goes into other areas, not just the engine.
Yeah.
And it'll come up, and if you go into it with your scan tool, it'll say transfer case, and you click on it, and I think you can diagnose that transfer case electronically.
Okay, so definitely get a
scan tool.
If you go to some of these auto parts stores without naming names, can't you use their scan tools?
They primarily give you check engine light codes, which are all emission driven.
Yeah.
In the hopes that they can sell you some parts that might fix the problem.
Right.
I don't think they're going to go into other areas of the car.
Gordon Fricke is our guest today. It's Car Maintenance and Repair, 800-348-2551. Let's grab one before the first break, and we'll go to Jake in Stuyvesant Falls. Jake, you're on.
Hi there. I have a 2013 Prius plug-in with 228,000 miles on it. It runs great. I've been told that after 225,000 miles, very often the head gasket goes. And I've gotten some different opinions about what to do about it. Some say just wait until it goes. My Toyota dealer says I should clean the ERG. And my local mechanic says if you're going to clean the ERG, you might as well clean that and get a new head gasket. I'm not looking to put in tons of money into the car at the moment, but I'm curious what your opinion is.
Well, it's a sizable job. It's quite expensive. Have you gotten any estimates to do that?
I've gotten like $2,000.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're not ready for the $2,000 bullet to bite, what's your plan with the car? Just drive it till there's nothing left?
Yes.
Okay. I think you could. Head gaskets are not something that you'd change as a maintenance item. And you may never have to change the head gasket in that car. You may be one of the ones where it just lasts forever. I think I would wait for symptoms. and not do it ahead of time. If it was a different scenario, if you had a vehicle that had a known problem with, let's say, head gaskets or premature timing belt failures in the days with timing belts, absolutely do it ahead of time because it's going to happen to you. But if this isn't imminent, I think I would keep the service up, keep the coolant changed as needed, and just watch it, you know.
All right, Jake.
Okay, and what would be signs that there are problems with the head gasket?
Well, they can do a few things. They can leak coolant externally. They can leak coolant internally, and then it goes into the cylinder combustion chamber and it gets burned up. And they can also, in some cases, I don't know about your car, they can intermix oil and coolant. You know, it can get kind of ugly.
Yeah.
And the worst one probably, or I don't know if it's worse, but combustion gases getting into the cooling system, and now you got air in the coolant. The coolant goes away, and you overheat. And when you overheat, you can cook the engine. It can be bad news for sure.
All right, Jake, thanks a lot. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's cars and repairs and maintenance and yada, yada. We'll be back. Plays like butter, that guy. That's ABCD, Chuck DeLoya on the guitar, and ZD Blues. 800-348-2551 is the number here. It's Gordon Fricke Day on Vox Pop. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Another person who wrote in very early, 7:18 a.m. My buddy John wrote in, the orange icon that says we have low tire pressure comes on intermittently. I've checked the pressure repeatedly with a gauge, and it's okay. Went to a tire store. The nice guy there said the intermittent nature of the warning indicates the tire pressure monitors are either bad or in need of new batteries in a 5-year-old Subaru Forester. He says that to even check that, you have to take the tires off the rims, look at the sensors, and then remount and balance the tires. There may be an alignment in there, too. Estimated cost, $400. He also says I could just wait till I need new tires. I believe him, Gordon, but wonder what you have to say. And that's from John.
Yeah, that's really common. And 5 years is not that old. Those tire pressure sensors, the batteries are built in. They're integral with the sensor, so you can't replace the batteries.
Right.
But 5 years is young. They're pretty easy to diagnose, but you need the equipment. You need a TPMS diagnostic tool. And what you do is you enter the vehicle information, and then it tells you to go to each wheel as instructed, and it does a handshake with the sensor and gets information from it. Tire pressure, temperature, battery life.
Uh-huh.
So you can check all of your sensors very easily with the equipment. Could be one failing. Could be a battery getting weak. I doubt it needs them all, being an old 5-year-old car, did he say it was?
Yeah.
You don't need to be taking everything apart initially. Get it diagnosed with a TPMS diagnostic tool.
A little cheaper. Yeah. All right. Thank you for that one. This email from Henri, who says, I have a 2015 Chevrolet Cruze LT. A few weeks ago, I noticed that when I turn on the heat, I smell a burning, melting smell in the cabin. Went to a local mechanic, and he advised me that the car is leaking oil at the oil cooler line to the turbo. The mechanic advised me to take the car to a local dealership. I brought my car to a local Chevy dealership. The mechanic there confirmed that the oil is leaking, but at three locations: 1, at the oil cooler line to the turbo; 2, at the valve cover; 3, at the oil pan. The mechanic at the dealership did replace the oil cooler line to the turbo and the valve cover. After that, the burning, melting smell was not present, but in recent days, it has returned. My questions: 1, if I replace the oil pan, will this resolve the issue with the smell? 1A, is this a major safety hazard and I need to replace it immediately, or can I hold off on the oil pan replacement? 2, is it possible that there is another leak somewhere near the engine, and when I turn the heat on, the fan blows the burning, melting smell back to me?
The last part of it is potentially possible,
okay.
For sure.
All right.
And the areas that they did address are common with that engine. The valve cover on that engine, I believe, is plastic, and there's a bunch of stuff built into it. The ventilation valve is in there and other things. Common for those to fail and leak. The line to the turbo, yes, also. The pan, sometimes that's a little deceiving because gravity brings every oil leak down.
Right.
And they all roll around usually the pan to engine block connection, and then they, you know, seep down the pan and hit the ground.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will be fooled in thinking, oh, it's a leaking oil pan gasket, it's something higher. You always have to look up.
Yeah.
If the leak is getting on the exhaust, yes, that's what he's smelling. And it certainly could be the oil pan gasket or oil pan at this point, but it's got to get back in and looked at. And it's probably not dangerous unless dripping oil is getting on the hot exhaust.
And that could be trouble.
Especially if it's anywhere near the catalytic converter, because that's hot enough to light it.
Okay, and yeah. We don't want that.
Yeah, yep.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Let's go back to our phone lines, and we will go to Scotia. Steve. Hello, Steve. You're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I got a 2005 Mercury Grand Marquis that the alarm system screwed up the other day, and it would not allow me to start the car. I had to have it towed to my mechanic, and I just wonder if there's any tips that would I could give him to eliminate this thing so it never happens again.
Yeah, I don't think you can eliminate it, because even that car, it's integrated into the computer, into the ECM or part of it. You don't know yet what caused it. Did he get it running?
No, it's still dead.
Okay. What I've discovered on a lot of cars, not just yours, is once in a while when you get a security lockup, and that was a common thing with General Motors for a while, they'd freak out and not recognize the chip in the key. But I have had success with doing a complete power cycle of the vehicle, where we disconnect the battery. And then this is where Ray gets nervous every time.
Ahead,
he knows what I'm up to here.
Go ahead.
We then, with the disconnected battery, in other words, no terminals on the battery, we then make a wire connection to join the two leads. And that will drain down all the capacitors, all the modules, and put all the computers kind of back in normal land. And that tends to cure so many quirks and weird aspects of a car. A friend of mine's car came in for other work, and he said, my heated seats are stuck. My heating system is stuck. I can't move the diagram. I can't move the heat. I power cycled the car because of the repairs that I was doing, and I kind of forgot about him saying anything about that. And he said, what'd you end up doing to fix the heater and the heated seats? I said, I forgot completely about it. He says, everything's working fine now. So, I mean, that's something that is super easy to do and solves a lot of problems. So I would definitely try that.
Start with that. Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Steve, thank you for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Now, is there a book? I seem to recall there was a book for pricing repairs. Is it like Blue Book?
Yeah, there's a labor guide.
Yeah.
Parts and labor guide.
So when you have to, you don't have to tell any trade secrets, but when it's something like that, where you cycle through the power, it doesn't take probably 15 minutes to do it, is that a billable hour?
Well, sure, because, I don't know how, it all depends on how you feel you're going to bill your diagnostic still. Some shops, minimum hour for everything. Dealerships,
right.
Particularly, 1 minute or 59.99 minutes is 1 hour, no matter how they dice it.
Right.
I usually don't do that. If that takes me 15 minutes, I'll, whatever I got into it,
right.
Within reason.
Well, I didn't say you.
Well, yeah. But
I'm not impugning your honesty or integrity.
It's certainly billable because what that can fix could save you hours and hours and hours and hours at the wrong place.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop at WAMC.org is the email. Renee is in Ballston Spa. Renee, you're on.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I have a 2015 Volvo XC60. I love, love, love it. We got it used. I wish it would last forever. The people who maintain it for me just recently, maybe a year ago, replaced the axle on one side. They were going to do both sides because of a very persistent whirring noise. Sometimes as soon as you start up the car, sometimes when you turn, sometimes not at all. So they thought changing the axles, but the left side was so frozen due to the age of the car, I guess. They were afraid if they kept persisting, a bolt might break off and fall into the something or other, and then I'd have real problems. So I'm driving it with that whirring sound that comes and goes, and I'm wondering, you know, is it going to blow up or is it just going to stop? The axle just break? Like, have you ever heard of such a thing, and do you have any thoughts on it?
When do you hear the whirring noise?
As I said, sometimes the minute you turn the car on and when you turn and sometimes not, it's not consistent. I pulled into a parking lot the other day and my friends were already there and they said, oh my gosh, Renee, do you know the noise, your sound, your car? I'm like, yeah, I know. It makes that whirring noise, I know.
But you don't have to be in motion to hear the noise. You can just hear it when you start the engine?
Correct.
Okay. So that rules out all the powertrain, the drivetrain, the axles, the bearings, the transmit, all that stuff. That stuff's out of the picture. If the noise you're concerned with is happening without putting the car in motion, it is definitely something unrelated. You may have needed a drive axle for maybe another reason, but that drive axle, nothing's happening with that axle until you put the transmission gear and start moving.
I see.
So,
right.
So the whirring sound would then be anything that's driven by the engine, and that could be the alternator, the AC compressor, the pulleys that keep the belt in line and tight. I think the thing there would be to do is have the vehicle at the shop overnight. When does the sound occur? Every time or once in a great while?
No, as I said, it's intermittent.
Yeah.
It's intermittent.
Problems like that, I need to experience them and hear them. And sometimes I'll get cars left for a day or two or three, and I'll just go out and try it a bunch of times and then maybe catch it.
Yeah.
But
if
they hear the sound happening, car's not moving, hood open, pretty good chance they're going to have enough time to see or hear where it's coming from. But it's something turning with the engine, not the drivetrain by the sound of it.
Okay. And one final quick question. I don't know if it's even fair to ask you, but the same person who keeps my car going, he used to work at a Volvo dealership for many years, so he seems to know Volvos, and he said he would not get a Volvo later than my year, the 2015. And sure enough, in Consumer Reports, they don't rate well. Huh. I'm surprised at that. So now, what are your thoughts? Thoughts on that?
Do they still make Volvos?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so we're not going to get sued, so be very diplomatic about what you say next.
Well, back to what would Roger think?
Right.
Over-engineering, over-complexity, over-design, over-development, too technical, packaging, trying to get a billion things under the hood that, you know, have no room anymore. We've gone too far with over-designing things for the sake of efficiency and being quiet and keeping up with the next car maker.
Right.
You know, Volvo's, you know, got this going and Audi doesn't. So, you know, we're going to out-tech them.
Right.
And it becomes a tech war.
All right. Renee, thanks a lot for the call. You ever work on an amphibious vehicle?
I have had vehicles go in water. Is that what you're talking about?
No, every now and then you see on one of these 60s or 70s shows a car that will go on the road and then you drive it right into a lake.
Well, the what was it called? An amphicar
I want one.
In the 60s or 50s or whatever. They're out there. Go get a Hemmings book and see if you can find one.
Can you fix it up for me?
You could cross the Hudson in it.
Well, good. Then I don't have to go over the Dunn Memorial Bridge. Right. Perfect. Robert in Rotterdam. Robert, you're on.
Hey, you. I'm here.
Yeah, go, man.
All right. Okay. So, question about a brand new car. 2025 Mustang. What do you think, Gordon?
So you're talking about a Mustang, not a Mach-E, correct?
And the it's a five liter.
Okay, yeah. Now you're talking.
Looking at it, it's a pretty car, but I'm not quite sure it's worth it. $63,000.
All right. Well, let's leave prices out of this for a bit. But go ahead.
Well, so
yeah, I'm just wondering about the car itself in a Ford. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're getting a nice V8. Not a highly highly strung and turbocharged four-cylinder. So
I didn't want that. I just want a normal V8.
Yeah, that's kind of a muscle car in today's world. So it have a manual transmission?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, you should just get the car. forget about the $60,000. It's a V8 with a probably a 6-speed, right?
Yeah, it's a 6-speed. I love the car.
Buy the car.
Well, it sounds like you do love it, Robert. I don't know. I've only owned one Ford in my life, and I thought it was a fantastic car, and it lasted forever.
Yeah.
It was 30 years ago.
No, I just want it.
I think you're going to have fun with it, and do your best deal, because don't let anybody fool you. There's a lot of inventory out there in the automotive world, and they are looking to sell cars. So negotiate your best deal.
You know what, bud?
What? Listen, man.
I want to buy this for my wife.
All right, listen, though. Listen, if you don't like it, Gordon is not legally responsible. Just want to put it out there.
That's okay. I love it.
All right,
I want
man.
It.
Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest. Paul is in Albany. Paul, you're on.
Thank you. Yes, I have a 2010 Toyota Yaris, and it concerns the check engine light and the codes. The twist here is that waiting for a suspension part, the car's been off the road for like a week and a half, and of course we've had the cold weather. The situation is there was no check engine light on when I left the car off a week and a half ago, and subsequently, now that the part has come in, you notice the check engine light is on now. And I'm wondering what could cause the check engine light to come on in that interim. They said the code, I don't know if the number was 305 or what, but it said the label was misfire.
Yep.
I didn't experience any misfire while driving it beforehand. They said it would be traced to plugs and needing new plugs. And I guess iridium has now been superseded by, I forget, ruthenium or something. So maybe you can speak a little bit about plug development briefly as well. But what could cause a check engine light to come on when the car has been sitting and not driving in that time? I thought, I don't know, the cold, condensation, it just seems strange.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if the check engine light's going to come on, it's got to come on at some point or another. And sometimes it's coincidental or it's a bad time. Misfire codes are very, very common. They may be the most common or maybe next to EVAP codes, but they can be from a spark plug issue, an ignition coil concern, carbon buildup, deposits on the valves and piston tops, and a fuel injector not spraying properly, a lot of things, low compression.
So you want to clean that thing out.
Well, a lot of those things aren't going to happen from shutting it off to restarting it 2 weeks later, but generally,
they said not a coil issue, definitely. They just mentioned the plugs. They didn't mention anything else.
How old?
It's been at least 45,000 miles since I've had the car as far as the plugs go. I don't know how long. I have the previous records, but I didn't have quick access to see how much longer, how long the plugs have been in there. You know, they might be the originals for all I know, but they're at least 45,000 miles.
And it's a Yaris?
Yes, 2010.
Okay, yeah, so it's a four-cylinder. So that's an easier engine to diagnose. You don't have eight spark plugs and coils or six. But yeah, let them. You need to trace it. You know, spark plugs are very, very commonly the cause of this. But like I said, those other items all come into play. But you have to step through the diagnostic procedure.
But if it's a fuel injector or gunk, shouldn't you put some of that stuff in and clean it out?
An additive would be wise in any case, any car, any time. Just don't overdo it,
and,
for sure.
And what is a Yaris?
It's a very small Toyota. It was like the kind of replaced the Tercel, maybe. It's a very, very small entry-level car.
Well, it sounds like a Bond villain. You know, Yaris. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. You know, Zach had a Yaris once.
I just learned that. I hope he didn't hear us talking about Yarises in private.
No, well, I've never even seen a Yaris before. And with a name like that, I don't know. I mean, you'd expect a car with an ugly name to be really good. Like Smucker's, right? We have so many emails, okay?
Can I make one quick comment?
Yeah.
The caller with the Mustang, that was a very, very clever ploy. He's buying his wife a V8 six-speed Mustang.
Yeah.
Who do you think's going to drive it? A lot of the time.
Yeah, you know.
Like, can I buy my wife a new, I don't know, motorcycle or a
right.
muscle car?
Like that time I bought my wife a snowblower. It was great.
Oh, excellent.
She doesn't use it.
Yeah, anyway, back to the emails.
Oh, yeah, okay. And we have so many that we could do a nine-hour show today. And we'll just do what we can. Remember, Gordon's on every month. Tom writes in, I wrote in last time regarding my 2018 Hyundai Tucson burning excessive oil. Could you recommend a heavier weight oil to reduce the loss of same? I'm currently at 5W20.
Well, you can't go too thick and heavy. Again, we're talking about some of these vehicles that were designed to run on relatively thin oils by old standards. So if you go too thick, you may have some trouble. But GM has got a little thing going with some V8 engines that are having big problems, and they're very short-term remedies to go from a 0.20 to a 0.40 motor oil to thicken up the upper end of it, you know, the hot part of it.
Yeah.
So he could step that up. What's he currently using?
5W20.
Okay. You can go 530 and you can go 540. I think the car can handle it.
All right. Yeah. This is from Karen. I'm afraid that my 2014 Jetta is burning up 2 quarts about every 3 weeks.
Mm.
It's only got 140,000 miles. It's been a great car. Any ideas as to what's going on? It has no discernible oil leaks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's consuming oil. Every engine does, some more than others. But we're forgetting that here's a car with 140-something thousand miles on it, right? Go back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. You barely could get that out of any engine.
Yeah.
Everybody was rebuilding engines. They were doing rings and pistons and valve jobs.
Yep.
Today, people are so disappointed if they burn a quart of oil every 1,000 miles, and then you say, how many miles are on? Well, it's got 180,000 on it. I mean, give the thing a break.
Okay. So just put oil in it, basically.
Well, I think at this point I would keep up with it.
All right. This is from, don't know who this is from, Mac, I guess. Considering buying a Honda Element, any major problems to look out for? Are the all-wheel drive components troublesome compared to a front-wheel drive version?
No, they were a wacky vehicle.
Why?
You know what they look like?
No.
No, they were real boxy and a lot of plastic panels, big like...
Oh, I think I know, yeah.
Big plastic fenders and...
Like a Bulgarian taxi.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
However, as most everything Honda makes, they were really good.
Yeah.
They don't make them anymore.
No.
But they were durable, tough, like any old Honda, and the all-wheel drive was good. So if he wants one, get a good one.
Yeah, fair enough. Samuel writes in, the other day it was 34 degrees. I started my truck, started driving immediately. I soon noticed a severe shaking when I pressed even moderately on the gas. Check engine light began blinking. I was nervous about shutting it off for fear I wouldn't get it started again. So I drove about 15 miles to my destination, turned it off, restarted it. It ran fine. No check engine light. Has not happened again.
That was a misfire, as we spoke about earlier on that Yaris, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
And it could have been for a variety of reasons that cleared up after driving it. Could have been stuff in a fuel injector like we spoke about. The plugs, the spark plugs, could be getting tired, and one was fouling up, and the heat and the driving and the turbulence of the engine running cleared it. If he were to get the vehicle scanned, there'd be history of what cylinder was causing the problem.
Yeah.
And might be proactive to look into it. And if the spark plugs are ancient and the filters are super dirty, it might be maintenance time.
Okay. Somebody, unnamed, wrote in, 2010 through 12 Prius had bad head gasket failure issues. 2013 and up did not.
And I think that caller was a 13.
Okay.
So, again, keep running it and watch it.
All right, last one from the email for now, and I apologize if we don't get to everybody, but we got to go back to the phones. Frank writes in, last week's snowstorm was a slap in the face to those of us who aren't so good at driving in the snow. If you would, please give us some much-needed advice. While driving down the road, what's the best thing to do if you feel the back of your car starting to go in a different direction than the front of your car? Is this fishtailing? And if so, what would you do when this happens?
Don't panic. Don't slam on the brakes.
Definitely not.
Off of the gas and turn into the slide.
Which is somewhat counterintuitive.
Well, if the back end is coming around to your left, you turn into the slide.
Yep.
to keep the car going in the same direction.
Right.
We used to do that intentionally out in the back roads of East Hoosick. We had a blast driving on slippery roads.
Right.
But yeah, and it's everything is about tires, not just the tread depth, but the type of tire. A real full-blown winter tire is different than a all-season tire.
They call that, I think the kids call it drifting now.
Yeah, a lot of fun. You have to have a rear-wheel drive car to drift.
Yeah, I remember in the high school parking lot during the snow when they didn't care so much 100 years ago, just doing fishtails.
A lot of fun.
Oh, good old
days. Good way to learn how to drive in slippery weather.
Oh, memories. All right, let's go to Great Barrington. Robert, you're on. Hello.
Hello, guys. Merry Christmas. I have a question about, I just came out of the mechanic, and he, with a Mazda 3 2010 with a clutch, and the clutch was slipping. And he said, like, yeah, it would be like $2,000. You'd rather buy another car. And it has 195,000 miles. And I was hoping maybe you can refer if I can get a high mileage vehicle just for the little money that I have left. What do you think?
How much money are you looking to spend?
Well, no, we can't really do that sort of thing.
No, but
I'm looking for to get a like an Audi or BMW.
BMW.
Well, so I would be careful buying older European cars, any high-end car that gets old, because they can be tough to fix, very expensive. Just because they're 15 years old doesn't mean they're any cheaper to repair, and sometimes they're tougher to repair. So if you're on a budget, don't buy an old European car. Buy a older, more basic, more easy to fix Japanese car, for that matter.
Like a Yaris.
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
Camry.
All right.
Corolla, Civic, Accord, something that's known for high life and low trouble.
All right, Robert, thanks a lot. Yeah, a buddy of mine, maybe out of high school, he bought a BMW, an older one. And we were like, all the boys were like, wow, you got a BMW. About a year down the road, it wasn't looking so good.
Did it ring his wallet out?
I believe it did.
Yeah.
I believe that's what happened. Yeah. Let's go to Jim and Madam Morris. Jim, you're on.
I'm having almost the same problem as you. The AM, FM part of the radio was going on and off. But then it's pretty much mostly off now, the CD player. And satellite radio works.
Huh. Well, it sounds like the antenna's out. Did you hit a bump, Jim?
The antenna's out?
Well, there's a plug. Usually, in the old days, there was a plug in the back for those antennas. I don't know if they still are today.
Yeah, I mean, they do connect somehow. They're still antennas. They're all embedded now. They're in the windshields or you know, places where you can't see them.
Yeah. This is a 2012 Challenger.
Okay, well, it's hard to diagnose this over the phone. I mean, you have to see it.
What you can do is, without damaging the dashboard or the radio, you can, you know, bang on it and see if you can reproduce what's happening when you're driving. And if you can reproduce it by kind of jarring the unit, it's probably an internal issue with the unit itself, because it's all one box in there now, basically.
Yeah. Jim, thanks, and good luck. Let's go to Sharon, Connecticut. Matthew, you're on.
Hello.
Hang on. Yeah. Are there pigs and chickens behind you right now? What's going on, Matthew?
Chickens. I'm eating my chickens.
Fine. Okay.
Right. A 2002 Toyota Highlander, 250,000 miles. Good car. All the check engine lights went started going off. Brought it to the dealer. They said, quote unquote, not worth fixing it. What would you recommend as like a car that old with that many miles? What would you spend on it to fix it?
Well, you got to look at what it costs to replace it within reason. I mean, you're not going to go out and get another vehicle with 250,000 miles on it to replace it with. But I mean, without knowing the list of what it needs, I mean, not worth fixing. Did they say because of what it's going to take to fix the check engine light?
Or was there timing belt issues, things like that?
My inclination on a vehicle that old with that many miles is not to put a ton of money into it, because if you put a couple $1,000s into the vehicle or $2,500 and it's up and running and going again, and then 3 months later you suffer a big failure, transmission finally decides to go away or whatever, now you're not going to do that all over again. You're not going to put another $4,000 or $5,000 into it. So now sometimes you might want to just call it a great car and not put any more money into it.
Yeah.
But without me seeing or knowing it, you don't want to put a lot of money into something that old with that many miles on it.
It depends on how much money you have. If you're a multimillionaire and you got it to throw around, go for it, man.
Yeah, get it overhauled.
Yeah.
Turn it into a classic.
Yeah, no, it's not that nice.
All right.
No, it's been through it. All right, guys, thank you.
Thanks, Matthew. Appreciate the call. Good luck with the chickens. 800-348-2551 is the number. In the waning moments with Gordon Fricke, we'll go to Potown. Tom, you're on.
Yeah, hi. 2011 GMC Acadia mystery noise. I have a loud, slow clacking coming from what sounds like behind the dashboard on startup intermittently, and it doesn't seem to matter if my heater AC is on or off.
Is it pretty rhythmic, like a click, 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 and it times out?
Yep, exactly.
Does it time out almost the same amount of time every time you start it, you know, let's say 30 seconds or 20 seconds?
Yeah.
That's what's happening there is one of the actuators that operates the doors in your heating and ventilation system is stuck, and they've got a little fail safe so they don't damage themselves and everything. They'll just click. They'll just kind of skip a tooth. It's like they're plastic gears. And a lot of times it is the actuator motor itself causing the problem. And some of them are quite easy to change. Have you noticed that you can't adjust the heat in certain areas? You can't go to defrost, you can't go to the floor, or is everything working?
It seems like everything is working, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah. I think one of those doors is stuck, and it's probably stuck in a good position because it's not affecting how the car heats and cools. You could opt to do nothing with it and just let it click out, because it'll run through a timer and stop. But if you want to fix it, that'll be an easy one, because just removing a few panels underneath the dashboard area, when you turn the key on, the technician will be able to go right to the clicking. And you can also scan that heating system for codes, and it'll usually come up with the motor that's having trouble, tell you which one it is. I don't think it's a horrendous
Amazing.
Fix.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Let's go to East Moncton, Vermont, very quickly. And Mark, you're on.
Yes, I have a 1996 Chevy S10 SL. I got it in Florida, beautiful shape. There were a lot of issues with it, and I went right, had this dealership go right to the whole car, new plug, this and that, so on and so forth, but they couldn't figure out it was skipping on it was only running on five cylinders. I had to bring it all back to Vermont. That was tough. Took it to a dealership up here, and this young guy figured it out. It was like the pins on a carburetor or something. So anyhow, it ran great. He said, you need to put some additive for that cylinder. I did. And then this fall, spring, it started skipping. Not real bad, but just noticeable. And I took it out to him, and he tried another diagnosis. I spent $220, and he couldn't figure it out. He said, it's skipping all over the place. So I put some Lucas upper cylinder lubricant, and that seemed to help tremendously. And it brought my oil pressure up to like 45 from 40. What do you think?
So it's a V6 by the sounds of it, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think going to that era of Chevrolet V6s, I think they had a spider injection manifold system where they've got a big injector that sends the fuel out to each of the six cylinders in little hoses with little nozzles on them. And that was trouble in those years, if yours has that spider injection thing.
Yeah, I think it does. But this guy replaced all of that. I spent $1,800 on him going right through this down in Florida. I mean, I put like maybe 1,200 miles a year on the truck. I put it up for the winter. It's just when I need to do something, I got a truck.
Yeah. It's like any misfire diagnosis. You got to go cylinder by cylinder and see to isolate it. And depending on what he replaced that with, I mean, you have to, in the back of your mind, be a little suspicious maybe of if that something went wrong with that new unit that he put in there, if you replaced that whole spider. So I would not rule out that could be it again based on the likelihood or possibility of a defect or something wrong with that part.
All right, Mark, we have to leave it there. Very quickly, Ann writes in from Millbrook, I have a 2003 Prius. How long do I have to warm it up now that it's cold out?
Yeah, it's a controversial question, but you want to, if it's really cold, this morning it was zero in my world, right?
Terrible, yeah.
So if you're parked outside at zero, when you start your vehicle, it's going to tell you it's cold. You're going to hear noises that you don't normally hear and whine. 30 seconds to a couple of minutes at least. So your oil pressure comes up, it stabilizes, and you know, you're getting some things in motion. I tend to wait a little longer.
Yeah. Well, you're the expert. Hey, Gordon Fricke, we're done. Listen, when you retire in a couple few years, we might have to do this every 2 weeks. There have been so many people left on the line and whatnot.
We're going to have to ramp up, do an auxiliary show.
All right, maybe we'll have to pay you too. I don't know. Forget it. Support comes from Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live at age gracefully with dignity and respect. DaughtersofSarah.org. Gardner Supply, Hadley, Massachusetts, celebrating the holidays with fresh-cut greens, wreaths, trees, and supplies for the bird lovers at Gift Cards for Gardeners, gardeners.com. And the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, featuring fake plants and other curiosities, a solo exhibition by contemporary artist Nina Kachadorian throughout historic Hyde House, on view through March 8th, hydecollection.org. Once again, thanks to the great Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for writing. Sorry if we didn't get to your question. Gordon will be back next month until he retires, and then we'll negotiate. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Tomorrow, it's stamps and coins. David Tripp and Bob Scott will be here. We'll see you then.